Hello, and welcome to the CISC podcast. In each edition of this series, you'll have the chance to meet a CISC staff member or other educational professional involved with the CISC community. We think you will find these podcasts of great value as a variety of people share their unique insights in their respective fields. Now, please enjoy this edition of the podcast as our host, Bob Kretzmer, speaks with our guest.
Our guest today, Jim DePras, is an experienced consultant whom CISC relies on a great deal for guidance on claims related to fire and water damage. Over the last several years, CISC member districts have experienced their share of costly and disruptive property claims. Some of these more costly claims have resulted from ash and smoke damage connected to large wildfire losses. How can our member districts help mitigate these claims and protect district property for the safety of their students? We sat down with Jim on November 9th, 2022, to ask him about some of the steps our member districts and site administrators can take to help prevent and lessen the impact of these claims. Jim has been a licensed general contractor in the state of California since 1975. As the owner of James F. DePras Incorporated, Jim specialized in insurance-related reconstruction from 1975 to 2013. Over that time period, Jim contributed to or wrote over 7,000 structural claim estimates that resulted in repair work involving jobs of all shapes and sizes. We think you will enjoy listening to our conversation as we tap into Jim's experience as a contractor and restoration specialist. Thank you for listening. Jim, thanks a lot for taking the time to visit with us today. We really appreciate you coming in and value your partnership with CISC. So thank you.
You're welcome. And I felt honored that you asked me to do this.
Okay. So can you share with us a little bit about your background and what led you to becoming a consultant?
Sure. I was a general contractor specializing in insurance restoration for 38 years in Ventura. And then in about 2010, the economy wasn't doing very well, and contractors and remodelers were going after restoration work, which made the margins even more difficult to run a business. So I was doing some consultation work then, and my wife suggested, why don't you just shut it down and go after the consultant work? And I went, wow, that's not a bad idea. So we sold the business there, the office and the equipment, and moved up to Oakhurst. So that's my background. But one day when I was walking in the neighborhood, there was an adjuster and a neighbor who you know is Rob Powers saw me, and he said, so I hear you're not contracting anymore. And I said, no. He said, well, you know what? We specialize in JPA claims, and you did a lot of work with the schools, and we'd like to utilize your services. You think you might like to work with us on that? And I went, well, let me think about it. Okay, let's do it, you know, that type of thing. And I had a great relationship with most of the district people that I worked with on those schools, so it was seemed like a great fit. And for about 3 or 4 years, I did that before we moved up here.
So a frequent occurrence at many of our CISC locations takes place as a result of broken water lines or the failure of a water line. How can site administrators help prevent these events?
Well, I would say the best thing to do is to use the motto of the Boy Scouts, and that is to be prepared. I suggest them to do frequent inspections of the property to look for problems. One of the things I would suggest is to inspect flat roof areas. We had a situation where a tennis ball got stuck in a roof drain and the torrential rains built up and the part of the roof collapsed. That would not have happened if somebody had gone up there and looked and made sure that the drains were clear. So that's one thing they can look for. The other thing we'd be looking for is tears in the roof, especially with wind damages. We get some strong winds through like the Arvin area, and if there's a foothold where the wind can get underneath some shingles, it's off to the races, and it just starts and just rips the whole roof right off. So
And are there some common mistakes made by site administrators, Jim, that might help mitigate against unnecessary damages?
Well, the only thing I would think is that I would suggest, and I may be preaching to the choir that are people that are hearing this, because maybe a lot of them are doing this, but if they're not, I'm glad to give them a pointer. And that is, I would say, going back to that motto of the Boy Scouts is be prepared, is I would think it would be a great idea is to have a sheet for emergency situations. It's kind of similar to like you break an alarm, you know, break the glass in case of a fire to get something help. Well, you break out the three-ring binder, and here's everything you need in there in case of an emergency. So you would have phone numbers for people that can dry out and put the dehumidifiers in, like a service master or serve pro. You would have people that you've already vetted as far as restoration contractors that are experienced in the work. So you could get those people and you would have this sheet updated frequently with emergency call numbers. How do I get a hold of somebody in the middle of the night? Because that's when these problems occur and you need to get that. Fencing companies that can put up a temporary fence around it, because these are attractive nuisances and we want to keep kids from going into that area. All those particular issues that are going on with that.
Sure, yeah. Sure. And as you know, winter is coming, and some of our locations could see heavier than normal winds or rain this year. What are some of the things that our site administrators can do to help mitigate against these types of losses?
Well, again, it goes back to what I was just saying about being prepared and doing that inspection. We talked about this the other day about ruptured water lines and broken water lines. Those type of things are usually concealed or under the ground, and you don't really know until it happens. So we have to look for the things that are visible, that a small maintenance cost could be applied, as opposed to a big repair bill towards that. It speaks to that looking, like I said, I really stress the thing about looking at roofs, especially flat roofs. Look for evidence of standing water. You know, if we got a lot of standing water from rains, that's a potential for a leak to come through, because the roofing product is made to deter water, not to hold it back into like a swimming pool situation. So if we see standing water evidence, get with a roofing contractor, figure out how we can put another drain in there or something to vent that water off into away from the area. So those are, like I said, those are the kind of things that are going to mitigate the damages and mitigate the expenses is the preventive maintenance.
Sure. Now, is the flat roof construction, Jim, something we see at our older districts, or is there still a lot of flat roof construction going on?
I think it's older buildings. And I think to some degree, it's in some of the newer ones, but not as much. I know that there's a lot of architects that their insurance, liability insurance, are wanting them not to design flat roofs because of the problems with that. So,
okay.
Getting away from that.
Emergency restoration companies are frequently called out after a major event. Do you have any tips for our site administrators when working with these vendors?
Sure. That is to be very proactive with them. You know, tell them that you'd want a written assessment as soon as possible of what they see as the damage, what did they anticipate they'll need to do, how much equipment is going to be necessary. Will they be monitoring the equipment, those type of situations? I think the more you pose those questions, the more these people are going to keep it in their mind, I better keep my pencil sharp, because they're interested in cost savings as opposed to just sending a bill at the end of the week. The cost of that equipment is quite high per day in the charges that comes in. And so if we can get a dry down to be accomplished in 4 or 5 days as opposed to 10 or 12, then it didn't need to be because nobody was out there monitoring it. That's a savings to the district.
Sure. As we navigate our way through the age of wildfires in California, some of our districts have experienced and will experience ash and smoke damage, even though they may not see any structural damage on their campuses. What have you seen that would help prevent the extent of these types of damages?
Well, when I was in Ventura working with the JPA programs there, we were hit with the Thomas Fire, which was quite extensive, and we lost over 600 homes in that area. A lot of the schools were affected with ash, and we had some washdowns of the playground equipment, and that happened in December, so schools were still going on for that. So we did a lot of the washdown of the playground area and the equipment. And then we found out later that, and I don't know who made this decision, but they wanted to have all of the structures washed down from the roof to the buildings outside. And then it got very costly because that water that was used for the washdown had to be trapped because they didn't want it to be contaminated into anything else. It had to be trapped by like sandbag situations around it. And then the water had to be sucked out in vacuum trucks and hauled away. I'm told that the cost for that was above $16 million that they spent for that, for the school districts there.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So
and I would have thought that rain would have taken care of it, but it wasn't that it would wash a lot of that away. And it probably did, but then they were concerned that the ash mixed with the water was still a problem, so it had to be vacuumed up.
I see. In a situation like that, where that washdown is taking place, do agencies from the state also appear on scene, or do they leave that up to the licensed contractors that are doing that type of work?
You know, I don't recall anybody from the state involved. I know that the York Business Services were the adjusters that we worked with on that. They employed hygienists to establish protocol on some of these issues, and that's what the contractors followed was that protocol.
Right. But that additional cost of sucking up that water, putting it into tankers, hauling it away is something that probably a lot of our listeners would not be anticipating.
Well, I hope not, because like I said, I didn't anticipate that expense coming at all either. You know,
right.
That was my first experience with smoke and ash problems with to that degree.
Sure. Are there items of information you would need from a site administrator before your arrival at the scene, after a vet has taken place, but before you actually arrive on scene? What are some of the things you'd like to see a site administrator prepare?
Well, most of the time when I get called out on losses like that, I receive an email in advance of who my point of contact is, their email address, their cell number, things like this. And then I make immediate contact with them saying, I will be on site at this particular time. Can we meet to walk through the areas? I want you to point out everything that you know is damaged, so we can, you know, structure some type of a scope of work to do that. So if they tell me that, also if they can inform me that yes, we have called a restoration company, or we have a preferred contractor that's going to be on site when you come there. The more information I can gather so I can make my time on the site the most productive, that's what I want to do with that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll go off script a little bit here, Jim, and just take, for example, we have a fire at a school site involving a wing of classrooms. Now that you're on site, can you, and you're walking around with the site administrator or the administrator designee, what are the kind of things you're going to be looking for that are going to really impact your estimate?
Finding out what the damages are, I'm going to look at it. Was the air conditioning system on at the time of the fire? Did it impact the air ducts with smoke and soot? So I have to make a phone call to get somebody out there to inspect that. I want to know what do you know, the maintenance individual or whatever, what do you know that you think caused the fire? So they'll point out, they'll point out it was a clock plugged in or something like that. And I want to make sure that we secure that as quickly as possible so it doesn't get tossed out, because there's a possibility of subrogation action that can be applied. So if we have a subrogation, then the school district can be reimbursed for the monies, because that was the fault of the clock, not you. So I want to do those particular issues. We'll find out from companies like the ServPro, the ServiceMaster. I don't want to plug any particular company. I'm just going to say these people understand how to do that work.
Sure.
They know how to isolate the area off, drop plastic, so keep the area free of anybody coming through. So you know, we want to make sure that nobody gets injured, nobody gets sick. You know, so that's basically that.
Sure. And so in many of those situations, we'll see where portable classrooms need to be ordered and placed on site. Is that a frequent occurrence you'll see after a major fire?
Depending on the size of the fire and what's involved, sure, yeah. And those are decisions that really have nothing to do with me as far as costing-wise or anything like that. Now, I may help. I work a lot with Ryan Bourget, as you know, in your office here, and he's excellent. And I like to gather as much information of what needs to be done, and I feel that and communicate that to him so he can help make decisions, you know, much quicker to get things back up to normal as quickly as possible.
Sure, so, sure.
And I can tell him, yes, there's a site that's right next to it, parking lot area that you could put up a temporary building, and, you know, so... And he's got experience, so he knows where to get those buildings. And frankly, I don't. So,
sure.
Yeah.
Is there a tipping point when you are on site and you have to make a determination or a recommendation as to whether or not this particular classroom is usable? Is there a tipping point in terms of the extent of damage in the adjacent classroom that tells you, yes, the next door classroom is not going to be usable? Or how do you evaluate that? Is it strictly by smell? Is it strictly by structural damage? What are some of the guideposts there?
Well, we have to determine what is the physical damage we can see to the adjacent building. So we've had one not too long ago in Paso Robles, and one room was fairly gutted, but next door had a smoke damage to it. But we know that there was so many workers coming in and out for where the damage is, that they needed that area isolated. So that was determined to shut that classroom down for a while because it wouldn't be safe for the kids. Yeah, and they're curious. They want to know what's going on, you know, and they're going to lift up plastic and they're going to go into areas that you got to let the workers do their work. So that's basically it, I think, is to isolate the area so we get the workers done in the most efficient way possible, in and out.
On any typical fire, and I know that a lot of that depends on the extent, but once an event like that happens, are you able to tell pretty much at your first look how long it will take to restore any particular building, or is that a process that takes longer even to assess?
I think I have a fairly good hand on that. For 38 years doing fire restoration, and I think we anticipated that we were involved with 6,000 claims in that time frame before I shut down. So that was one of the things we would have to do right away when we would meet on a fire loss, is to help set reserves, basically do a cost projection just off the top of your head. How much do we think this would be, and what do you think it'll take? And, you know, you could say 3 months, 4 months, whatever that particular thing is. And that's depending on special orders, you know, that be involved with that. But I can come pretty close, I think, to projecting how long something's going to take.
Sure. In the age we're living in now, and as I understand it, due to the pandemic and what we've experienced over these last few years, sometimes the acquisition of materials can be an issue.
That's right.
Have you seen that on other jobs that you have worked since March of 2020, where the acquisition of materials has become an issue?
Yes. I do cost consulting for other carriers sometimes, and I have one going on in Santa Maria, and the house had white aluminum windows, and they couldn't get them. And the supplier said, I can't get them until January. So they didn't want to keep the people out of the house any longer to replace the windows because of the damage. So but they could get white vinyl windows. So the carrier had to make a decision, okay, it might be a slightly betterment, but we'll replace all the windows on the front elevation instead of that one. But that was directly because of, they would say it's up on a ship out in the ocean and we can't get those windows here. So,
right.
So it has right. impacted some cost in some ways.
Have you seen it improve over the last 12 months, or would you say that it's still an issue?
Frankly, I don't have any evidence to tell me either way on that at the present time, so I wouldn't even want to venture a guess on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I will venture a guess. I'm going to guess that it's not doing any that much better because it just, that just seems that life is,
Right.
It's going to take a little longer for things to get somewhat back to normal.
Back to normal. Sure, yeah. Sure. Well, it's a good point for our administrators to be aware of. Can you think of any other steps, Jim, that a site administrator can take once you're on site with them to help assess the damages upon your arrival? I know we've covered that in some detail, but is there anything that we're missing? Once you're on site, what else can that site administrator do for you?
Well, like I said, mostly is to walk through the different rooms that are involved. If there's different, the teachers of the different classrooms, if they have concerns, what are they talking about? Let's say that there's a lot, water damage is involved. I'd like to see the school to start moving the contents out as quickly as possible, because if it's smoke, the more that smoke penetrates into the surfaces of the materials or the books or whatever, the bit larger chances are that it's going to have to be scrapped. So if we can get it out quickly, the professional restoration companies have ways of cleaning it, so you can reutilize that, but get it out of there as quickly as possible. Free up the area, take the desks out. That's what I'd like to see them happen, do as quickly as possible that way. The other thing is when there's a fire damage, not to throw anything away until we can get the experts out there to look at it, especially for subrogation. We don't want to lose that subrogation item, and so we can take photographs of where things were, how they were, what possibly caused it. I'm going to ask the site people, have you had any remodeling done lately? Have you had any electrical work done? Anything that could tie this, that give us reason of what caused the fire. And not that we want to get the vendor in trouble. It's the equipment that failed. So we need to find out what it was. I had the plumber here and he put in new stop valves. And then we find out that the stop valves were defective. And, 2 o'clock in the morning, we have a big flood. So.
Sure. Yeah. Well, those are good legitimate points. I might add that, so our listeners know, typically you're brought in by the adjuster, and in our case, Ryan Bourget is typically the individual at CISC that will make contact with you. So I want to emphasize to our listeners that it's really important that whenever a major event like this does happen, that they notify CISC immediately.
That's right.
So the sooner we get you out there, the better. But that initial notification to CISC is so important, and there are multiple ways that the CISC adjuster and our office can be reached even after hours on the weekend, and that's just simply a matter of checking our website, but we want to make sure our listeners understand the importance of that.
Mm-hmm. When Ryan usually will send me an email explaining what the assignment is, who the contact is, and then he immediately calls me on the phone. So I just sent you an email. I want you to look at it. When can you get out there? And usually I can get there between 2 and 6 hours at any time I'm called. I give you, I like working with you and the company, and I think that's I believe in a sense of urgency for these type of things, you know. And I want people to know that it's important to us, it's important to Ryan, and important to me, and get out there as quickly as possible. When I first things I do is I photograph the area, excuse me, and write a narrative and email that to Ryan right away. So he is almost like he has eyes on it himself as I'm walking through. If this is through the front door, and the, well, you know, this is what I see on the ceiling, this is what I see on the walls, this is what I'm concerned about with this area. So he has an understanding. So when we talk on the phone, he'll ask me what he wants me to do. And what I do is basically is I establish a written scope of work that we give to the bidding contractors. So it kind of, that helps control the cost. Because if we don't have a written scope of work, what needs to be done, and we have three contractors come in, we're going to get estimates ranging all over the place because everybody has a different opinion what needs to be done. So we like to start off with just a simple, I see this, 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 and this. Let's have an estimate for that, and then we'll build on that afterwards when we get the job open and started. That's one of the things to do.
So, sure, yeah. Sure. Well, how about anything else, Jim, that we may have skipped over that you think is just important?
Well, the only thing I would say, and this is really critical to me, I think, is whenever possible, if the area managers or whatever you want to call it, can set up a report before a large fire happens or a large problem and interview some local restoration contractors. So they can have a rapport with that particular individual ahead of time, get all the information about how do I contact you in the middle of the night if I need this. And the reason is because when we get those people involved, they understand that the estimates have to be written in a certain way, detailed, breaking things down. How long, you know, how many square feet of drywall are we going to take out in this area? What is the square foot cost for that? How much is painting on that? What is the flooring? All of those. When there's a lot of excellent contractors that are doing public works jobs on these different schools, and they have a relationship with the schools that they're there, and they get called, but they don't understand how to bid insurance claim work. My job is to review the cost so I can write back and say, I have inspected these losses, damages, and the cost, and I find the scope and the cost to be fair and reasonable. But when I'm dealing with a contractor that doesn't know how to break things down, and they give me lump sum numbers, for example, not too long ago, I was one on a school, and he said the drywall is $15,000. I said, I don't think so. How could the drywall be $15,000? How many square feet of drywall do you have? Well, I don't know. He said, I was depending on my subcontractor. Well, now we put it over to there. So I write an Xactimate estimate with a sketch. So it tells you how many square feet's in there. So afterwards, we negotiated that particular job down, and the drywall went from $15,000 to $2,500. So, you know, there's no way I'm thinking that these guys think they're trying to cheat us or rip us off, but they don't understand. So they'll look at it and go, well, how do I know that the drywall's not bad over there? Or if I open up this drywall, we find out that the drywall on the other side's not going. So and then they want to build contingencies into the job. And I said, no. No, there's no such thing as contingencies in the job. I don't want you to lose any money whatsoever on this job. And the school doesn't want you to lose any money. But we don't want to pay any more money than we have to. We want to put it back the way it was, like, kind, and quality on it. So I want you to bid what you see is damaged. And then if you get the job and we open it up and you find additional damage, then you call me and then we'll look at it and we'll go, yep, now we'll extend that drywall square footage by this, by X, and whatever it is. That's controlling it. But like I said, I did one not too long ago. It was a wind damage. And the estimate was sent to me. So I went out to the site and looked at it and got the estimate and got up on a ladder. And I'm looking at the estimate and I'm looking at the building. And I'm seeing things on the estimate that I don't see on the building, that it's calling out to do things. I didn't feel comfortable with that. So I contacted the school official and I said, are you committed to this contractor? Do you have a contractor signed already with them? He goes, no. I said, would you be upset if I called another contractor just to get an estimate, another one? No, whatever. You think it's, yeah, sure. That's what you're supposed to do. Go ahead. So I called, got a recommendation from a roofing contractor that understands insurance restoration work. I met him out there. We walked through the job, and that cost was reduced by $69,000. I asked that individual, the contractor, why did you put all this stuff in here? He goes, well, I think it needs it. And I said, well, you know what? Maybe it does. So what I'd like you to do on these in the future jobs, I want you to write the estimate for what you see, and then I want you to make a separate list of what things you think that the project could use. And then it's up to the district if they want to say, yeah, we'll do a separate contract for that, but we got to handle the damage first, and then you can do that.
And that's a great tip, because we could have a situation where the claim itself has a set cost, but if there is additional work that the district would choose to have done on its own,
sure,
they'll have a written estimate and they can address that
with the
contractor.
That's right. Yeah. We have to separate it, you know. And they, like I said, I don't think they're trying to cheat anybody. They just don't understand that. When I call up a restoration company that is well experienced, that follows the Xactimate format, the estimate, which Xactimate is the estimating program that it's about the standard of the industry. Most carriers and adjusters and restoration contractors utilize that. It breaks everything down. I know I can get that estimate, and I know how many square feet there is, and I know what it is per hour and everything like this. And it has to, is it following prevailing wage requirements, Davis-Bacon? And if I'm dealing with a typical remodeling public works contractor, and I'll say, well, you got to tell me how many hours you got in here for the framing. Well, they're very hesitant to give that. You know, they think, and it's not that I'm trying to cheat or take anything away from them. I just have to evaluate that and say, is that fair? Is it fair and reasonable? I taught for 12 years in Ventura. I taught at Ventura Community College under the Construction Technology Department, taught estimating and business management for contractors. So I tell these guys that, look, I am pro-contractor. I really am. I'll help you write the, and a lot of times I have to help them write the estimate. And we'll go through and I'll say, okay, let's go this, you know, we have how many feet of insulation in this room? We're going to replace that. And then they'll give me an estimate. I go, you don't have a scaffolding in here. You got to have rolling scaffolding. Oh yeah. So we'll put that in. We want to get the job done, and they can make a fair, reasonable profit, you know, because I tell them if we try to cheat money away from you, you can't guarantee the job. You won't be here next year. So we want it to do right by you and for you to do right by us. So, and most of the time when I get that through, expressed and they understand that, we have no problem whatsoever. It works out great.
Good.
So that's the main thing I just say. I understand that you got contractors for public works jobs, but if you're dealing with a claim and a disaster, you're better off to get some restoration contractors that understand, because they have a sense of urgency involved for it, because they want to get more calls from the adjusters. And if they're taking too long on a project and that, they know that they're not going to get called back because they go too slow. So you can build up a relationship with that. And I'm sure Ryan has names of contractors that he works with. He goes, yes, I would suggest you to call this guy. And it doesn't mean that they're committed to using that contractor, but it just means that we can have somebody that can start to develop a baseline cost that we can hang our hat on.
Great. Well, Jim, it's been a great conversation. We appreciate everything that you do for CISC, and it's good to know that our districts have a resource like you who they can reach out to along with CISC to help us speed up this process whenever called upon. So
sure.
Thanks again for spending the time with us today.
Well, you're welcome. And if anybody ever wanted I can develop a sheet with the questions for them to put on there of estimating, you know, of restoration contractor names and the areas. And if you want me to do that, just let me know. I'm happy to do that.
Wonderful, Jim. Well, thank you very much.
Well, I appreciate being here. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of the CISC podcast and greatly appreciate you listening to our show. Please check the CISC Property and Liability website at cisc.kern.org for a complete listing of podcast topics under the Property and Liability tab. Until next time, stay safe as we continue with the CISC mission of schools helping schools.
Production facilities for the CISC podcast are provided by KETN, a service of the Kern County Superintendent of Schools.